Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Poolside Perspectives podcast. I am Kevin Woodhurst, and with me is my good friend Mike Farley, and we're so glad you found this podcast. Together, we have been homeowner advocates in outdoor living and the pool industry for over 30 years. So we understand the challenges you face creating your backyard paradise. We know your curiosity is not enough to ensure your success. So on this podcast, we're going to talk about the design process and practical steps to help you create that space. We'll have some fun mixed in with it, some aha moments, and this is no fluff. No one has time for that. So we're going to get serious and get very particular about all of these topics. Whether you are a new homeowner with your first remodel or a seasoned homeowner completing your last dream home, we are here to help you end up with what you dreamed of. From pools to patios, pizza ovens to pergolas, porcelain to pumps, pool party to permits, ping pong tables to the processes to your paradise. This is Straight Talk and Action Steps. Let's get started.
Welcome back to Poolside Perspective Podcast. Today, we have an amazing guest. So he was going to speak with us last week, but he had to get on a plane and go to the filming of the Today Show. So we're blessed to have Ambrose Rowdy Gaines on the show. He's a three-time Olympic gold medalist. He set 10 world records between 1978 and 1984. He is an NBC Olympic commentator since 1992. I heard him as a motivational keynote speaker. He still does that today. He's often referred as the swimming's greatest ambassador. And maybe life goes on without the Olympics, but not for the fastest swimmer on earth. His determination to compete in the Los Angeles Olympic Games in 1984 and his stellar success marked Rowdy Gaines, one of the world's most dedicated as well as ambitious athletes, to symbolize the American quest for more than gold. Rowdy says, "It's never too late to achieve your dreams. I'm living proof of that." So without more, let's listen to Rowdy today.
So forgive my rudimentary studio here.
Not a problem at all. So did you go to your scooter ride?
I did. Yeah. Went for a little scooter ride this afternoon, or yesterday, actually. We played golf today, so it was fun. We had a good day on the course.
I greatly appreciate you jumping on with us today and to talk about
thank you.
Water safety. Kevin apologized. Kevin, I don't know if Charlie mentioned, is in cancer treatments. And they started radiation on him last week, and he was supposed to have a radiation treatment this morning, and they changed it to 4:30. So he is in treatment right as we speak right now. So hopefully
a little bit more important than what I'm doing
for me as well. Yes, sir. We wanted to really talk to you because it's an honor to have you here, given the spokesperson for you are for the water industry and what you've done over decades of period of time. So I got your book and read it.
Wow. Great.
That gave me a little bit more background. I like, likewise, hate to swim in cold water.
And oh my gosh, that's so funny. Yeah, it's my kryptonite, as I say. I can handle hot water, dirty water, deep water, shallow, it doesn't matter. Cold water gets me.
So I was born in Point Pleasant, New Jersey, and the hospital overlooked the ocean. And so I grew up in right outside of Seaside Heights before there was a Jersey Shore TV show. The kids had to explain to me. So that's where I grew up, with the Gulf Stream coming up from Florida where you grew up, you know, so it's all warm. Yep. And my mom was terrified of water. She grew up in Kansas, not a lot of water there. And she was made sure that me and my brother learned how to swim. And the way that she taught us how to swim is she threw us in the ocean and said, swim.
Yeah, that's how we were all taught, right?
Swim back. Well, you grew up in the lake.
The same generation. I'm 65. Absolutely. They just toss you in the water.
Yeah. It was good because she was scared of the water growing up. And she said, "I want you to have fun with the water. I don't want you to be afraid of the water. I want you to have fun." And that was our experience. And I've got water in my life ever since. So anyway. Yeah. Until I moved to Lubbock, Texas at 12, there wasn't much water there. We still had the sand.
Have you been in Lubbock ever since then?
No, I went to Texas Tech and got a degree in landscape architecture. And then I actually went out to California and I worked in California for 12 years. And that's where I switched over to the pool industry. And I've been back in Texas now for 22 years. My wife says I could go anywhere when we left California except to Lubbock. This podcast is for homeowners. And so what we want to do is give people information, but it's also good to hear a little bit how people got into it. So explain to people briefly, with all the things that you've done, how did you get from a kid growing up in Florida and swimming and everything, and including a lot of hotel pools? That was fun from a training.
Motel pools.
Okay. Yeah. How did you get to where you are today? How did that journey occur?
It's a bit of a long story, but to keep it short, I was born and raised in Florida. And when you're born and raised in an environment where water is part of your DNA, you learn how to swim at an early age, like we've just been talking about. My parents water skied for a place called Cypress Gardens. We grew up on a lake.
That's cool.
And my parents would take the boat across the lake for work. And I just grew up swimming. I didn't start competitive swimming now until I was 17. I was a junior in high school. And it was just on a whim. I had tried out for five other sports and got cut in every one of them. And swimming was just next in line. And I just fell in love with the water, fell in love with the competition. And it was part of my DNA as it was just from growing up swimming. And I took to it pretty fast, that's for sure.
That's really cool. I read about when you were going through your high school and doing all that. And it was amazing how you improved so greatly over a period of time with a lot of hard work.
I think you're right in the fact that, and I was blessed. There's no doubt about it. The Lord blessed me, no question, because I started swimming in February of 1976 and broke my first world record in July of 1978. So about 2.5 years after I started swimming, I broke my first world record. And when I first started, buddy, I looked like a typical five and under trying to swim down the pool. I didn't have goggles. I was like running into the lane line and just really clumsy. So it did happen very fast. But I will say that I committed myself. Once I realized that I wasn't going to get cut, I committed and went all in to make sure that I was going to be the best swimmer I could be. I didn't think about the Olympics, no way, but I really wanted to be the best swimmer possible.
So you won the state championship your senior year, and that got you a full ride to Auburn, which was a tremendous swimming school. So that's where you got the idea that you could go to the Olympics?
That's where my Olympic dream started, definitely when I went to Auburn. Not so much in high school. I just wanted to be a good high school swimmer, try to earn a little bit of a scholarship. But again, it happened quickly. By the time my end of senior year, I swam well enough to get that scholarship, like you said. And when I got to Auburn, you're around the big boys now. And in fact, on our team, my freshman year, there was an Olympian. His name was Billy Forster. He was a sophomore. I was a freshman, but he had just competed in the 1976 Olympics in Montreal. So yeah, the team was full of great swimmers. And then my dream was born. This is what I want to do. I watched the 76 Olympics on TV that summer and just was real inspired by those guys and women too.
Yeah. So you shaved your head to cut off some time, from what I understand. So you still do that today, right?
Can you tell?
Yeah.
Let's see.
Yeah.
No, that has nothing to do with it, buddy. That has something to do with having four daughters and five granddaughters. That's why my head looks like this.
Okay. I knew about the four daughters, but I didn't know about the five granddaughters.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. I had a house with two daughters and a wife, and I had to get a male dog so I could have some companionship. But then I was blessed. Our third child came 5 years later, and he is a boy. And
He's all boy. And you're not in my club.
Yeah.
You're out.
Yeah, I got kicked out because, you know.
You got kicked out of the club.
Yeah. So there's no Ambrose the fifth, huh?
No Ambrose the fifth. I'm the last of the line.
I thought maybe one of your daughters might pick it up, but they keep having granddaughters, huh?
I said that to them. I said, if we have a boy, it's okay to start over anyway with an Ambrose.
Right.
But they're not cooperating very much. Let me put it that way, Mike.
How old are your granddaughters?
They go from 6 to 16.
Okay. So I have two granddaughters and one
on the chain.
Yeah.
A game changer, isn't it?
Oh, it is definitely. I was being a soccer coach on Saturday for a bunch of five-year-old girls, so it was a blast. So
I hope your audience knows how critically joyous it is to have grandchildren. Yeah. Many, I'm sure, out there do, but I thought, you know, it's funny. say to yourself, you can't love your children more, right? There's no way you can have love greater than you have for your children. Obviously, your spouse, I love my wife and everything, but the joy. And then you have grandchildren and say, oh my God, I think I love my grandkids more than I love my kids. Yeah. Well, it's crazy.
The joke is you get to return them.
Yeah, that's right. Which, no doubt about it.
You know, yesterday we had Liana and Elena over after church and they stayed there while mom and dad went to the movies, but then we did get to give them back. So
that's awesome.
It's a lot of fun. Now, I know the 80 Olympics, I remember that, although not nearly like you remembered it, I'm sure, because you were a world record holder going into the 80 Olympics, right?
Yes, I had broken the world record in the 200 freestyle. Actually, the date was April 1st, 1980, April Fool's Day. And the day after I broke that world record, the president of the United States announced that we would not attend those Olympics. So it was a little ironic for sure. And the world record I broke, buddy, was a world record that was held by a Russian.
Oh, wow. That was a bad April Fool's joke, very much.
Yeah, it was.
Definitely.
It was.
But you became through determination, you were there in 84 in LA. So the Olympics on American soil, and you were the old guy on the team. Were you the oldest swimmer on the team?
I was.
You were the oldest swimmer. And you then won 3 golds in that Olympics. That's an amazing story with determination about how you went through in those years and persevered. I got to hear you do a keynote one time also, and you talked about that as well. So do you do a lot of speaking still?
I do. Yeah, I certainly do. Certainly a lot now within the industry, having been PHTA staff now for the last 3 years, I do a lot within the pool and hot tub industry, but I also do a lot with our Olympic sponsors. I do the broadcasting, obviously, for the Olympics. So I get out there and try to do as much as I can.
Yeah. So I think that's where a lot of people today, I told several people that I was interviewing you, and they all knew you because you're the commentator for swimming and
right.
have been for, 92 was it the first?
Yeah, that's right. 92 was my first Olympics. This will be my 9th.
Wow. That's an amazing journey just to see all the people that have come. And you do a lot of training with elite swimmers still, right?
I do. I do a lot of swim camps, and I go back to Auburn every summer and do a camp and try to do some clinics with, especially some clinics with some of our lesson providers that we've provided grants to. Going to Raleigh this weekend to do a little clinic for an autistic swim team. So I try to get out there and stay involved with doing clinics as much as possible.
That's awesome. So how did the passion, because I know you're very passionate about it, for water safety, how did that come about?
I think for me, I was very blessed to have parents that really cared about me being safe in and around water. I learned how to swim literally before I learned how to walk. I was 9 months old. I'd crawl into the lake and swim. And I don't know about you, but being around water has always brought my family the most joy in our lives. Like whether it's the pool or the beach or you go to the lake or being around water and swimming with your kids and swimming with your grandkids, right? And when a child drowns, it wipes that joy off the face of the earth for that family. And that family will never have joy around water ever again. And for me, that makes me really sad. And I want people to have the kind of joy that I had around the water with all of my family, with my parents, with my wife and children, and with our grandchildren. So I just started getting involved with finding out more and more about water safety and how the statistics are pretty staggering. And many families don't know about those statistics.
Yeah, I was amazed. I was reading that 75% of African-American children and 60% of Hispanic children don't know how to swim. That's a staggering number.
It is staggering. It's the number one cause of unintentional death from children ages 1 to 4, number 2 from 5 to 14. 80% of drownings happen in front of an adult. A child can drown in as little as 30 seconds. That's like sending a text on your phone, going to answer the door, check your laundry. That's how short of a time it can happen. And I'm not trying to tell you this, and I don't want people to misunderstand. I love this industry. I love how the pool and hot tub industry has literally wrapped their arms around what we're trying to do. We're trying to save lives. There's no doubt about it. But more importantly, I shouldn't say more importantly, but just as important, we want to create more swimmers.
Let's have
because
fun.
That's so true because, and again, this is not the reason why to do it, but when we create more swimmers, in the future, we're going to create more swimming pools. The more swimmers you're going to create, the more joy you're going to create for those families. And those kids are going to build swimming pools later on in their lives. Yeah. That definitely makes economic sense, but it's much more to me personal in the fact that I really want to save lives along the way.
Well, I'm sure it has to do with those four daughters and five granddaughters as well. We create memories around water. They're so powerful. I can think of a lot of events that my children would fight like cats and dogs, but if we got them in the pool together, they actually would get along. You know, when they were growing up, there was those times. I've had family members that I don't like to be around, but the 4th of July, we'd all go hang out in the pool together and we'd have fun together and we'd make good memories. Then we'd get out of the pool and talk politics and not want to talk to each other anymore.
It's true. It's that common denominator for so many of us. It's like watching the Olympics. I think families are glued to the TV together. It's not the only thing, but it's one of the only things on television that everybody can agree on. There's to watch the Olympics. Everybody can agree on, hey, let's go to the beach. Hey, let's go to the pool. You know, it's just one of those things that everybody will say, yeah, let's do it on a hot summer day.
Yes. Mike, we got a new question.
Oh, great. What's the question of the day?
It's Dolores from California.
Dolores. Yep. Awesome.
She wants to know what the difference is between a cave and a grotto because they're looking at getting a pool for their family and they can't figure out what the difference is between a cave and a grotto.
Okay. I have a definition of what the difference is between those two, but everybody may be a little bit different. To me, a grotto you sit in. Okay. So that means a lot of times this is under a water feature. And so two people can sit in that space. And I make my grottos about 6 feet wide. So two nice size adults can very comfortably sit in that space. And when I build that space, I like to have the walls on the sides go straight back. Because if it's a big ellipse, then 6 feet of an ellipse, there's not going to be enough space on the sides to fit in. You know, you're going to be shoved in. That's pretty tight. Mm-hmm. So anyway, but it's a place you sit under. So a cave you go into. So you enter the cave and you can stand in the cave and look around and you may see three or four or five or six or seven or eight people in under a cave.
Well, a speakeasy.
There was a project that was done recently in the basement of a home that was a speakeasy. I don't know what the difference between that and a cave is. So the most famous cave I can think of, besides the Bat Cave, but you didn't swim into that one, was Hugh Hefner had a cave at his mansion, and it was a very well-known cave for a long time that was built in Southern California. And you definitely were able to go into that cave. Multiple people.
So that sounds maybe more like a speakeasy than a cave?
I don't know.
When I think of a grotto, because I did a lot of them in Phoenix, I always imagine people are jumping off the grotto because there's water coming off that. Oftentimes there's a slide going around it. And we did a lot of, you know, here there seems to be a lot of prefab slides. And in Phoenix, we did a lot of concrete slides when we were doing slides. I'm not really a slide person per se. As far as my kids are grown, so I wouldn't have one, but they make some amazing slides here. I've seen on some projects are just crazy. Dolphin slides, I think.
Yeah, I think I want to address that as a separate question.
All right. Sounds good.
So tune in later for that question and the pros and cons of different slide types.
So getting back to the grotto and the cave, we're saying a cave you can walk back into, swim back into, you're going to get multiple people back in there where a grotto is going to be you're going to sit into.
So when I do a cave, I typically make the floor depth at 3'6". Mm-hmm. So when you swim into that space, you can stand there and you have headroom above you, but you can comfortably, it's like standing in the shallow part of the pool. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have a cave that's the floor is 6 feet deep. So if you're sitting on a bench and you step off of it, oh, you're a little child or something like that from a safety standpoint. Typically, all my caves are going to be that depth.
Gotcha. I think that's about as good of an explanation as I can think of between a cave and a grotto.
Okay.
Well, including all my blabbering.
Thank you for that question, Doris, and hopefully you enjoy your cave or grotto. What do we do other than, okay, we can donate money to help swimming programs. That's one thing you can do. It's easy to write a check. Okay. But what else do you recommend that we could do to help make, you know, May is Water Safety Month. Okay. So yeah. We want to bring that. It's the beginning of summer and people are going to get out and they're going to be in pools and lakes and around bodies of water. Are there things that we can do to help besides teach people how to swim? I guess that's number one, right? Is teach people how to swim?
It's one and 1A, I guess.
Okay.
The most important thing, and you will understand this more than anybody because you have those children who are in trouble. The adult, the parent, the grandparent has to be that first line of defense. As I said, most drownings happen right in front of an adult. When I say 80%, it's within 15 to 20 feet of that child. And it's because we live in a generation now where we're distracted easily, whether it's by phone or whatever. It has become a huge distraction, that smartphone. So my first advice to parents is please never take your eyes off the child because it can happen in an instant. And if you keep an eye on your child, then that child doesn't necessarily have to take swim lessons, if that makes sense. But the problem is that's not going to happen. You are going to take your eyes off your child, and then it's just natural. So that 1A is definitely put your child in swimming lessons, because if you take swimming lessons, it reduces that risk of drowning by 90%. Yeah. It's a pure and simple stat. We found the cure to drowning, and it's taking swim lessons. It's pretty simple. It's not rocket science. So those are two big things I try to get across to parents. And if I can get them to listen to those two things, their child will always be safe in and around water.
So would it be a suggestion that maybe if you're out by the pool, leave your phone in the house, watch your kid?
Leave your phone in the house or develop some sort of water watcher. We have these water watcher tags that we distribute sometimes. And basically, a lot of drownings happen at parties.
Yes.
Because one parent thinks that another parent's watching. You know, you have 15 adults and 15 children, and drowning is a silent killer. So it's not like the movies where they yell and scream. They literally are slipping in the water and they look like they're swimming with the other kids. We have water watchers, and basic meaning if you're having a party, then there's always an adult with a tag around their neck. That's all they're doing is watching children. They're just like eyes on the pool. Then they can take 15 minutes and then hand the water watcher to another adult. So there always needs to be that one adult watching a multitude of children swim.
Yeah, we built our pool. We built the pool so they would come, they being everybody. In junior high and high school, I wanted them all at my house, not somebody else's. And we hired our oldest daughter. She actually was a lifeguard. Her junior and senior year in high school. And so we hired Chelsea to watch everybody when Trey was having his buddies over and everything, just to keep an eye on everybody from a safety standpoint. Anyway, a bunch of boys.
That's fantastic. And I'm so proud of your daughter being a lifeguard. It's such a great profession for a young adult, older child. It teaches you so much, not only about our industry, but about life-saving techniques and social responsibility. The list goes on and on for how much respect I have for our lifeguards out there.
Oh, it was an excellent, it was one of her first jobs. She got certified through the safety training and then was able to do that. So do you have any other suggestions, or are there lists of things that homeowners should look for to work at?
Yeah.
Or is it an education standpoint?
It is. The education is very important. We use the B word, barriers. It's always good to have some sort of barrier surrounding your pool, whether it's a fence, making sure everything is operational. We had some friends of ours about 4 or 5 years ago, their child drowned, and they had a hole in their screened-in porch. And the child, they didn't realize it, obviously, and the child went through the screened-in porch and then unfortunately passed away tragically. And those are the things. Other thing is I say is create those barriers and make sure they're working order. Don't rely on cool toys. A lot of people say, if I throw a bunch of floaties in there, that should help a lot, and actually end up becoming a distraction. And they also become very attractive to those children when those pool toys are left. Yes, when they're left in the pool and they try to reach out to them. Many drownings happen in that manner. And the fact that you see those pool toys, and it's a magnet for a 3-year-old. Yeah, there's a lot of different ways, but it's easy to educate yourself. The CDC, you can go on their website. NDPA, they're a great partner of ours with Step in the Swim. NDPA has a whole list of educational tools to prepare yourself. Our website.org, there's a lot of education out there and easy to find. Just if you Google how to keep my child safe around the water, it'll list a variety of things.
So I know life jackets are something that a lot of people use with children mm-hmm. that don't know how to swim very well. And yep. of course, boating, that's a required situation.
Absolutely.
We raise golden retrievers. And we have a lot of people that get life jackets for their dogs, too, which I think is funny.
Sure. Why not? Because when you have an accident in the morning, anybody, and then if there's some sort of accident in the boat, sometimes you can get knocked out. That's the real purpose. Not so much whether you can swim or not. It's getting knocked out. And the life jacket is really primarily for something like that. And again, drownings in that young age group usually happen around in a pool or hot tub situation. The drownings from that 5 to 4 teenage group usually happen in an open water situation. So there are two different situations that you really need to prepare your child or your grandchild for.
Right. Okay.
You know, it's funny because I don't want to scare people. I really don't. I want people to be prepared. And I think to tell you the truth, when I first started in this industry, not a lot of people wanted to talk about the word drowning because it's not good for business. Over time, I have found so many people so generous, not only with their time and money, but also just spreading the word. And it just makes me so proud. And you know the guy named Charlie Claffey.
Yes,
and,
sir.
Charlie is a very dear friend. And I can tell you quite honestly, we would not be where we're at without Charlie. He was the first one on our board that stepped up and said, let's do something about this. Let's change lives. Let's save lives. And I'll be eternally grateful to him.
Yeah, he's a passionate man about it as well. So, and that's what you need is people to pass the word on. So how do you suggest we bring awareness for Water Safety Month? Any suggestions on that?
The big suggestion for me would be to have your audience be our warriors, be that military where you get the word out. You've listened to this podcast. You've watched me talk about it. Now, please, I'm begging you, go out there and tell other parents, tell your neighbors, tell your friends, tell your family members, tell your child that just has a 2 or 3 year old that doesn't know certain things about those statistics. Make sure your grandchildren are safe. And there are all kinds of different types of swim lessons, and it's really a personal decision. We had one of our granddaughters go through the ISR, and ISR is not for everybody, not for the faint of heart. It's 6 weeks, 5 days a week, 6 straight weeks, 15 minutes a day. And then they throw the child in the water fully clothed at the end of 6 weeks. It's not for everybody.
It is an amazing program, though.
It is an amazing program, and I love it. My granddaughter did it, but my other granddaughter did not do it. One felt good about doing it, my daughter, and it's really a very much a personal family decision. Yeah. Mommy and me class. Go ahead and start with mommy and me class. Whatever you need to do to introduce your child to water is really important.
Throwing me in the ocean worked for my mom.
You know what mine did? Remember those styrofoam bubbles they put on your back, and it had a little
strap.
Little strap. And so my mom put one of those on at the beginning of the summer. This is when I was a baby. And then she'd scrape some off every couple of days. And by the end of the summer, all I had was the belt around me and no styrofoam. We don't do that. I'm not professing you do that. Don't do that. But that was 60 years ago, yeah. 65 years.
That was one of the things. And yes, we lived through the 70s and 60s things.
Right.
Hopefully we all learn from some of those things.
Yeah, no doubt.
Any other advice you have for our homeowners?
The homeowner is somebody. The great thing about our organization, Step in the Swim, is the fact that two things. One, 100% of the money that's raised goes directly out the door. We don't keep anything off the top. My salary, all my expenses, and all the administrative costs are paid for by PHCA, which is very generous, obviously. And then our board, thanks to guys like Charlie, matches every dollar I raise. So when you donate $100, it's actually $200, which is really nice. And the third thing, which is important, is all the funds that we raise can be restricted. So, you know, if Charlie said, hey, I'm going to give you a certain amount of money and I want to stay in the Dallas area, we could do that. I guess my advice to those parents that are just now putting in pools or just put pools in, put your child in swim lessons. And I'll go back again to say, never take your eyes off that child.
And then a tribute to Step Up to Swim.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, great organization.
Thank you, buddy.
Yeah, I knew about that 100% of it went out. PHTA covers the rest of the expenses. How many people did that help last year?
We put about 23,000 children through swim lessons with about $850,000 worth of grants to about 150, 160 swim lesson providers around the country. We're in 40 states, hope to be in all 50 states this year, and we'll raise over $1 million this year. And again, with the board match, we hope to get a couple $1 million out the door this year.
So if you are an organization and you're looking for maybe to be sponsored or something like that, how do they go about doing that?
You go to stepintoswim.org, stepintoswim.org, and there's an application page on there. It's a very simple application. It doesn't matter whether it's a for-profit organization or nonprofit organization. We give grants to both. The prerequisite that we have is the funds have to be used only for swim lessons and for swim lessons for those children and families that would not normally be able to afford it. So, for example, we give a lot of money to YMCAs, Boys and Girls Clubs, Jewish Community Centers, Parks and Recs, because they usually try to really reach out and do some great outreach to those communities in need. Because, as you said at the very beginning, 70% of African-American children don't know how to swim, 60% of Hispanic, but it's not just a minority problem. 46% of Caucasian children don't know how to swim. So it doesn't matter whether you're rich or poor. It happens all the way across, but we really want to try to keep it geared to those children and families that can't afford it.
It's going to be a wonderful spring and look forward to swimming. And hopefully we can get some word out through social media and through our friends and family and spread the word on how to get some people more having fun around pools and water instead of being afraid of it. So I greatly, again, appreciate you coming on with us today. And what we'll do is include all your contact information with Step Up for Swim and everything like that. It'll be in the information on the podcast. So if people can find the website and then reach out to that. And then we'll try to put some other lists on there for different tools to look at for everything. But again, extremely appreciate your time and good luck in the Olympics coming up as well.
Thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Yeah, we'll be on NBC, starts July 25th, and we'll be in Paris.
Yeah, well, have fun in France. You get to go there very often?
Gosh, I haven't been there in a long time, but yeah, I'm all through swimming. I've been there a few times, but it's been 15, 20 years since I've been.
Yeah. I'm sure it'll be an amazing summer.
Yeah.
Thanks again. And
thank you.
We'll talk to you again sometime soon, Rowdy.
Sounds good. Sure. Appreciate it.
Take care.
Take care.
This show is all about helping you become a better buyer, a better pool owner, and hopefully you're going to find some insights into how to enjoy your pool even more so, how to help your friends, your family, anybody looking to buy a pool in the future or that want to remodel their backyard, add an outdoor fireplace, fire pit, add an outdoor kitchen area, add some shade cells or whatever else it is. We want to be that resource for you, and that's the end goal here, and we promise that there's going to be a ton of information. We'll try to go through it, you know, as relatively quickly, but also slow so people can understand. But the intent of the show, the reason Mike and I are doing this is because we just got a lot in our heads and we want to share it. So we hope to see you here every single week. Thanks for listening.